Lionesses are, of course, through to the Euros final this Sunday. But who will they face?
We know our place.
England are going to Wembley! England are through!
This is it. Five hard-fought games. 18 spectacular goals.
The cheekiest back heel you will ever see!
One victory away from glory on home soil.
Wembley awaits! For the Lionesses.
Who will England face in the final? Find out when Germany take on France tonight from 8. Watch on iPlayer, listen on BBC Sounds.
And now on Radio 4, Annika Rice delves into another of the important issues in her life.
Along to Annika Has Issues. Well, I'm already an emotional wreck after last week's programme, which was all about family. What I really, really needed after that exploration was vodka. Oh, no, I mean therapy. And therapy is handily the title of this week's show. Now, have you ever been hypnotised in the same room as Philip Schofield with your best friend in the corner watching and pretending to be a secret agent? Well, I have, and I really don't recommend it. At the time, I was meant to be regressed to a former life, but all I could think about was how the gutters needed clearing in the conservatory. I'm not a really good shoo-in for therapy at all, I have to say. And it wasn't my first stab at therapy. In my 30s and 40s, I tried a few things. Mostly, I realised that my subconscious is a dark, murky place and should be left alone. Because I work mainly on the basis that low-level anxiety and often madness is a part of the human condition. My default position is jeopardy. That's why I wear, you know, sensible clothes, stout boots. I have to be ready for troubleshooting. At a moment's notice, I can scramble a team to build a scout hat. I mean, should we do one now? I mean, there's loads of us. You sometimes hear about people, don't you, in the public eye. They speak out about their tough times. Their grief, say, you know, when a partner dies or there's real anguish when a long-term relationship finishes. If they're a bloke, they might even write a book about it. They might talk about how hard it is being a carer to their children. They've no idea where the washing machine is and everyone goes, oh, God, he's learnt to put on the warm wash and pick up the children from school. And everyone goes, oh, and then less than a year later, the person's moved on, got married again, and then they have to write another book called Moving On. On the whole, I don't think I'm a mover on a, it's not my natural default. Otherwise, I'd have written lots of these books by now. Have a listen to this clip from when I did my teenage diary on Radio 4. If you remember the programme, you take along your diaries to the studio and Rufus Hound tries to dissect your 14-year-old self. In this clip, I'm madly in love with my 15-year-old boyfriend, Glenn. We've just been to see Love Story together at the cinema. Love Story. I'm 14, he's 15. Have a listen. Saturday, May the 6th. Bought Nielsen Without You for Glenn. But what's funny, we played it to each other down the phone. On end. He'd play it and then I'd play it. Yeah. Oh, those are the days.
It's now 1973 and you're 14.
Saturday the 9th of June, black day. I went round to Rachel's in the evening. To my horror, Glenn was there with his arm round Claire. They left, saying they had to go, but instead they just went round to the fire escape to Rachel's room. I didn't know this, but went upstairs to see Ant, and there they were. I just said, hello, brightly, and stumbled downstairs again. Tried to make a phone call, but was crying so much I couldn't get the 2p in. Had to walk home in the rain. Tape some music, but went over... Sorry. It's coming out now. It's coming. Right.
taped some music but went over Killing Me Softly by mistake and it finished me off. Oh, God, and you won't even know what we mean by taping over something most of you. Yes. This is going to sound so mad, but I even tracked Glenn down recently. 50 years have passed, ladies and gentlemen. His wife brokered the reunion. I know, I met her at a book launch recently. I blurted out I'd never got over her husband's betrayal. She looked a bit baffled as I was 14 at the time of the betrayal, but she very sweetly arranged a whole dinner so we could meet up again and I could get it all out of my system. Can you imagine the trepidation ringing the doorbell? To be honest, I barely recognised him. Even if he'd had his name tattooed on his forehead with Nielsen's Without You blaring out of his letterbox, I'd have struggled. But the thing was, as soon as I saw him, I realised that him going up Claire's fire escape didn't matter. He could have gone up and down again all evening, as far as I was concerned, and round the back by the bins. Suddenly, it didn't matter. It did lead me to thinking, why as humans do some of us carry this unnatural baggage through life? Let's come over to a baby Annika. Hello. Now, just to explain the baby Annikas, they were all weirdly named after me at birth by parents who loved treasure hunt. And this slightly demonstrates how I'm not a mover on at all, because I can't bring myself to chuck out this massive file of photos and letters from all the parents of the baby Annikas. Now, this baby Annika, are you a hanger-oner or a mover-oner? Because I have to say, I know that there is a Challenge Annika board game involved in this story.
Yeah, so I am a big mover on her. I'm very good at sending things to the charity shop, having clear outs. My parents are not. They are massive hoarders. And I think one university year, there was Secret Santa and someone managed to get hold of a Challenge Annika board game, which my parents still have in their house. Not in my house, but
they've hung on to it. You've just chucked it out for the charity. And apparently your parents have got two sheds, one each.
Yes.
They are hangers-oners.
They are, yes.
On the subject of hanging on, I've got another baby Annika here. You have hung on to the name Annika, haven't you? You've slightly embraced it.
Absolutely. So, after Challenge Annika, I've got an Instagram profile called Challenge Annika.
What?
And I know, it's Annika with one N, so it wasn't taken. I'm sorry. But I've drawn so much inspiration from you. A few years ago, I actually trained as a personal trainer. And then I created the profile and I've challenged myself to do so many different things. So I trekked Everest Base Camp a few years ago for prostate cancer for my father, who is a prostate cancer survivor. I've trekked the Camino de Santiago twice. I've done Snowdon with my father for prostate cancer. And later this year, I'm doing Patagonia for endometriosis, so for my condition. So thank you so much.
Go, baby Annika! I mean, the thing is, as humans, we are meant to move on. Because we're hunter-gatherers, ladies and gentlemen. It's in our DNA. We just crack on with things. Now, though, everyone's become a bit of a wallower. Everyone needs therapy. Everyone wants to share. The trouble is, it's expensive and you can't get an appointment. If you do get an appointment, therapy sessions can obviously now be done on Zoom. I mean, that's a result. Anyone here doing therapy on Zoom?
I am, and actually I've just realised it's also a hanger-oner moment.
Yes.
It wasn't on Zoom before COVID and then it became a Zoom thing.
Yeah.
And after several months, I actually realised that the therapy wasn't helping and I couldn't bring myself to fire him. I could just stop. I was doing these useless Zoom therapy sessions for the 2 years of COVID, wasting extraordinary amounts of money. Yeah.
Oh, so yes, you've done the Zoom therapy and you're a hanger-oner.
Yeah.
Can I just say thank you for sharing? Can I just say, while we are now all sharing a bit more, I realise, I just want to ask, when you're doing a Zoom session, therapy or otherwise, does anyone else put a slug of gin and pretend it's coffee? Does anyone else? Right, who have we got here?
Yes, I may or may not have put a gin in a mug and had a tea bag tag. Oh!
Well done. Now, when I was growing up, sort of my generation, you never ever spoke about grief or loss or sadness or hurt. People felt the same way, but they just sort of got on with it in stoic silence. Nowadays, we all like to share and cry all the time in front of people. And there are baffling new meanings to old words. I mean, take boundaries. I mean, boundaries used to just be the bit at the end of the garden before your neighbour's compost heap. Now, though, boundaries are emotional. We tread very carefully. We don't dare tread on those eggshells. Cross at your peril. Now, I've built a career around crossing at my peril. My Jeopardy gene is always on fire, which is fantastic for a career taking on impossible challenges, but it plays havoc with my personal life. So, can you send humans to the repair shop? Wouldn't it be lovely if my sons could walk through those big barn doors and say to Jay Blades, is there anything you could do with my mum? Any chance you could get her working again? She's had a dodgy neck since Kevin Clifton tossed her into the air on Strictly. Talking of Strictly, I bumped into Shirley Ballas the other day at a BAFTA breakfast, you know, head judge on Strictly. I was standing there with Linda Robson, a croissant, and someone off EastEnders, and she came up and introduced herself and said, nice to meet you all. And I looked at her, like, waiting for her to show some recognition or maybe admire my waltz on Strictly, which she judged. It's just nothing. She then said to all of us, have any of you ever thought of doing Strictly? I mean, talk about being cancelled. I mean, I know I was utterly useless, but, you know. Anyway, back to the repair shop, where faded treasures are restored to their former glory. Jay would scratch his head and maybe get the teddy bear ladies to come over. I mean, it's an iconic design, but it's knackered. Will would throw up his hands in despair and smile sweetly. In the end, the entire team would set to. Needles would fly, machines would whir, extra vats of WD-40 would be ordered in, a ton of soft cotton wool. And my sons would come and collect me and they'd just say, thank you, thank you, and look in wonderment at their transformed mother. Jay would say, take your time. And my sons would cry because that's what they have to do. But sadly, instead of the repair shop, humans have to go to see therapists who aren't as good as Jay in the repair shop, because the thing is, we have to keep going back for more and more therapy and pay a great deal of money each time. I'd like to ask the audience here which bits of you you'd send to the repair shop. Come on, open up, guys.
My liver.
Oh, your liver. Oh, back of the room.
My knees and my father.
Your knees?
Yes, they're dodgy.
Anyone else?
This sounds a bit grim, but my brain. No, but I was going to say it's because I'm severely epileptic. Recently, 5 years ago.
Oh.
But I get so much free stuff.
Do you? What night? What night?
I've got free tickets to the Isle of Wight Festival next week.
Oh, yes! Oh, my God. Every cloud has a silver lining. Well, listen. Hang on. I'm running down the audience. Which bit?
I've had my right hip replaced, and I really enjoyed it because I was given morphine whenever I wanted it for 3 days. So I quite like my left hip replaced now as well.
Okay, good. I feel we were beginning to sound like we were all in a care home. Then I just say. Anyway. Philippa Perry is a renowned psychotherapist. She's got a column in The Observer. She sorts out people's problems. She's written a book, The Book You Wish Your Parents Had Read. I asked Philippa whether we're out of control now with our willingness to share and find solace anywhere we can find it. Has it all gone too far? Should we button things up a bit?
I'm not keen on the victim culture. I'm not keen on who's got the biggest bruise. I think it's getting a bit competitive. Who's the most miserable? I think it's really good to know what you're feeling and unpack your feelings. I think it's important to express them, but when you've got permission to express them, please don't tell me about your hip operation if I've just met you and we're on the bus.
Too much information.
I want to know what you think about the weather first.
Yes.
And then we can get into the hip and how miserable it's made you or whatever it is. You know what I mean? It's like too much too fast, I think, sometimes.
Yeah. No, quite right.
But having said that, Annika, I want to give you permission now to just tell me anything and everything you're feeling.
Well, okay. We meet on a Monday.
Well, the thing is about you and me, Annika, is that we're friends. I like the give and take of our relationship, but I can refer you to a psychotherapist if that's what you'd like.
I thought because you were my friend, you were going to give me this for free.
No, no.
Now, my real happy thing is my front door, which I can go through. As soon as it clunks shut, I feel safe. Does anyone else sort of have that feeling? Yeah. For all of us, possibly, you know, if you yearn for a stable home life, you then occupy your house with fierce protective love, especially if you have children to protect. And, oh, my God, the altercations I used to have with the paparazzi. Once I was leaving the house with my toddler children and a paparazzo appeared from nowhere and started snapping. And although this happened practically every time we went out, I snapped on this occasion. A crowd gathered. I grabbed his camera, nearly garrotting him as it was round his neck. The crowd was really invested in this. Go, Annika! This was before the age of camera phones, by the way, so we all felt quite safe in our violence. Honestly. Who was going to see it? Didn't think that was going to get a round of applause. Anyway, we collectively could have murdered that man. I chucked his camera to the pavement. Several people jumped on top of it. Then the funniest thing was we then went quite British on ourselves and sort of dusted ourselves down, kind of muttered goodbye without making eye contact. So anyway, we do digress, but you can see why home is important, I think, for all of us here and why I liked staying at home. Maybe it all started with the front door when I was 3 years old. When I was three, my mother disappeared. I remember doors slamming, hushed voices as I watched from the banisters above, and a lady from up the road bundled me into a car. I sat on the back seat, a tiny figure with a bag and my teddy, and when we pulled up at a large grey door, I started screaming. I knew I was going to be unhappy behind that door. And I remember to this day the feeling of slipping on the polished floor in my tights as a terrifying lady pulled me behind her. And that first lunchtime, being sent to wash my hands and not being able to turn off the tap, you know, fumbling with the taps, clammy hands, the utter panic, the lady looming over me, the slap. And then at lunchtime, not being able to eat a thing and a tin of sweets embossed with red soldiers being passed round the table and two smug children staring at me, taking their toffees and then the box passing over me. By the time my mother returned to collect me several weeks later, I was a mess by all accounts. I used to crawl round after her with my hands around her ankles. I remember this utterly vividly. It was particularly difficult when she tried to go upstairs, but I hung on for dear life with my mum dragging me along like a bit of old driftwood from the beach caught on her slacks. I remember the starchiness of the stirrups on her slacks, my eyes fixed on that weird bit of stirrup. Do you remember slacks, anyone? Yes. Such a funny word, slacks, isn't it, with stirrups? A lot of people are just looking quite blank at this moment. Now, on the scale of 1 to 10 of trauma, not even on the chart, but it's made me very mindful to this day of separation. I've never forgotten that feeling of abandonment, weirdly. Let's have a little chat about therapy. Do shout out if you've had a go at any of this yourself. Jungian dream therapy, anyone? Now, Carl Jung saw dreams as the psyche's attempt to communicate important things to the individual. Well, I had a go at this. This one was weird. You have to sleep with a pen and notepad on your pillow. And if you woke up, you had to quickly write down your dream before you forgot it. And then you just turned over and go back to sleep. Well, I had a few nights when I was impaled by my barrow, literally. I'd turn over and I'd just be stabbed by my pen. Anyway, I got the hang of it. And then I had to stop completely when I realised that my subconscious was trapped in a tiny room with high walls and my children were on the other side. Honestly, my mind was a torture chamber. Even the therapist looked upset when I had my catch-up session. I was the one left to say to him, "Don't worry, honestly, it was only a dream. Here, have a tissue." I felt that crossed a line, frankly. But I could see where it was all coming from because I was a busy working single mum and I hated being apart from my kids. And you know what it's like. You bust your gut trying to be everywhere at once. For example, once I was flat out filming a challenge and my son really wanted me to be one of the mums helping on the school trip. The school was going to a farm in deepest Kent and parents were needed to hold hands and coats and look at pigs. I couldn't think of anything nicer. The only problem was I was in Sheffield, hundreds of miles away with Dave the sound man and 150 burly builders. And I only had a tiny window of opportunity while the concrete was setting. So I chartered a helicopter. I flew down south. I mean, I know you can get there on National Express for £7.99, but I had a three-hour window, ladies and gentlemen, all in, and that included cuddling newly hatched chickens. The pilot landed the helicopter in a field down the lane. I changed out of my challenge kit behind a bush and was there to meet the school coach. It cost a fortune in helicopter fees, but Thomas was happy. I was happy. The burly builders were thrilled when I brought them back some key rings with little piglets on them. So I just wondered, I know we don't all have access to a helicopter. That does sound a bit weird now I'd mention it, but different times. Now I just go everywhere on the bus. But then, of course, there's always a bit of straightforward chatting to a person type of therapy, you know, old school, which I'm sure lots of you may have tried. It works out very expensive, though. It's about £2 a minute. All I could hear in my head was the clock ticking and Kenneth Kendall saying,
10 minutes to go, Annie.
Now, anyone who's had therapy will know that the first few sessions involve the therapist laboriously writing down every detail of your childhood. It can take hours. That's expensive. So to save time, I used to take a document along with me. 6 A4 sheets of small type. Look, here's my life and the main problem I'd like to discuss today is detailed here, page 2. Can we crack straight on with that? Then I tried hypnotherapy. Has anyone tried that? I mean, it sounds fun, doesn't it? Okay, it helped that the therapist was absolutely gorgeous. So the thought of being in a darkened cocoon-like room with him for a couple of hours on a rainy Monday was very appealing. But my mind was racing. I couldn't shut it off despite his honeyed voice and valiant attempts to relax me. Oh my God, in desperation, I wrote a shopping list. I wondered whether Kenneth Kendall had ever owned a tracksuit. My mind was all over the place. So you can see, I'm not a natural shoo-in for therapy at all. But then came one of the most embarrassing times in my career that I mentioned at the start of it all, involving Philip Schofield. Have I Been Here Before was a TV show hosted by Philip. The premise was that celebrities would be hypnotised and regressed to their former lives. The trouble was there was a complicated pay structure. You got paid one fee for the first attempt at hypnosis. Then, and only then, if you were successfully hypnotised and regressed to a past life, you got paid a second fee and the TV company went off and made a film about your past. Well, I really wanted both those fees. I was determined I was going to be hypnotised. To add to it all, my best friend was watching from the corner, pretending to be my non-existent agent. I didn't have an agent at the time, and they needed one along for health and safety reasons. Lisa had to come. That was a mistake as well. Anyway, you can see where this is going. So I settled down on the couch. I was determined that this was going to work.
So, Annika, it's time to relax. Let your mind go, that's right. And now you are entering a long tunnel. As you walk down, you are aware of the distant sound of waves crashing against a pebbly beach.
Nothing. All I could think about was what I needed to get from Waitrose on the way home. What's wrong with me? I wasn't hearing waves. I was in the deep freeze section buying fish fingers for the kids. The producer called a break in the studio because it was actually quite tense. I was beginning to panic. I really wanted the hypnosis to work in order to get the second fee. So I decided to go for it.
Yes, yes, I hear footsteps. I'm running along cobbled streets. I can hear the pitter-patter of my shoes on the cobbles. I smell the sea. I'm hiding behind a crate. I'm on a boat. I'm climbing high up the rigging. We're on the high seas. There is land, new land.
What's your name?
Dick.
Oh, my God. I was a cabin boy called... Where did that come from? Well, it came from my A-level history. I mean, it's the only time my A-levels have ever been any use to me because I did the Age of Discovery in the 1400s, which was all about trips to, you know, new land in the Americas. It all kicked in, and Dick went off to the Americas on a ship to find tobacco. I had the dates, I had everything. It worked. Everyone believed I'd had a deep experience under hypnosis. The TV company went off and made a film about it all. And I had a charming interview with Philip Schofield about being Dick. And I got the second fee. Yay! When Philip ended the programme with his final question, you'll hear now. I do hesitate for quite a long time. Have a listen.
So I'm going to ask Annika now for that million-dollar question. Have you been here before?
Yeah.
Oh dear, it's all on YouTube. I think I'm between Cheryl Baker finding out she was a taxidermist in the 1600s and Tony Blackburn discovering he was a town crier in Basingstoke.
Where are you now, Annie?
Kenneth, I have no idea. I need more instructions. You can see how my life is like being on drugs the entire time. Oh, what have we learnt today? Well, we know that we'll do extreme things to be a good parent. Glenn's wife is very nice. Some of us find it difficult to move on. Frankly, we're all a bit mad. Next time, do join us because we'll be talking about death. So that'll be really jolly. Honestly, it will be. Thank you, everyone. Annika Has Issues was devised, written and performed by me, Annika Rice, and produced by Alison Vernon-Smith. It was a BBC Studios production for Radio 4.
And the series continues at the same time next week.